read is highly constrained by information that we're getting about hadronic amplitudes non-perturbatively with lattice calculations, such as that one there, as I'll explain through the talk. So I'm going to give a few examples of what's been accomplished so far in lattice gauge theory and where I think we're going, sort of with a couple of closing questions to bear in mind. What do we expect from lattice QCD in the LHC era? And what can we hope for from beyond the standard model lattice gauge theory, which is just beginning? Lattice quantum field theories are defined on a lattice. The quarks are defined on the sites of the lattice, and the gluons are SU3 matrices that live on links. Continuum quantum field theories are obtained in the zero lattice spacing limit. This limit is very expensive to take when Monte Carlo calculations are used to solve the theory. Lattice theory is defined from its path integral, z, the integral over all possible fields, in the after making a Wick rotation, moving to Euclidean time, this makes the action S real, and so we can use Monte Carlo sampling methods. That means that there are some interesting theories we'd really like to do that can't be done at the present time, theories with complex path integrals, like finite temperature thermodynamics, and theories with complex fermion reps. In lattice theories, differential operators are replaced by discrete differences. In the simplest discretization of the Dirac equation, the derivative is replaced by a discrete difference. This is so-called naive fermions. This produces a propagator that has 16 poles, poles not only at momentum zero, but also at momentum pi. Naively, this looks like there are 16 times as many particles in the theory as you wanted, and that naive look is exactly right if you analyze it more thoroughly. So there are several ways of handling this difficulty currently, and it's not known which one is the best. In staggered and naive fermion calculations, staggered were invented by Lenny Susskind many years ago, the extra species are removed in unquenched calculations by taking the root of the fermion determinant. Unquenched here means taking the account of quark-antiquark pairs in the vacuum into account. Ken Wilson solved the problem by adding a Laplacian operator into his action. That's that operator there. This propagator here, which for zero momentum has effects that vanish in the continuum limit and gets rid of the poles at momentum pi. This, however, strongly breaks chiral symmetry at the cutoff, because you have two chirally breaking terms in the Laplacian, a one-link term and a zero-link term that renormalize differently. So you have terrible spurious chiral symmetry breaking operators that have to be painfully removed. The nicest from a theoretical point of view are the domain wall operators that David Kaplan introduced. These operators introduce a fifth dimension, a fictitious fifth dimension, and put domain boundaries on it, and then the fermions live at zero modes on these domain boundaries. So this has beautiful chiral symmetry, but is very expensive because a fifth dimension has to be taken to infinity. Now, these has produced three families of lattice fermions with wildly incommensurate virtues and defects. Staggered fermions have good chiral symmetry, but they are theoretically complicated in fermion doubling, but they're very cheap. So the phenomenology of these is the most advanced. Wilson fermions have no fermion doubling, but horrible chiral behavior, so it's been hard to get to light quark masses with them. And domain wall and overlap fermions are beautiful theoretically, but very expensive. Now, I wouldn't bother you with all of these technical details, which are, after all, should be swept under the rug, except that there are currently religious wars in the lattice community, and so sometimes you have to find out which religion your friend belongs to if he's telling you about his lattice results. But I think now that we have advanced enough that we can do good unquenched calculations with all of these methods, that these wars will slowly tone down. So great progress has been made in the last 5 years. There are many quantities which, when you left out the effects of light quarks, differed from each other by 10% or so. And now with modern unquenched calculations, they're agreeing with experiment better and better and better. This set of quantities is a very simple set of quantities. There are masses of simple mesons, the leptonic decay constants of the pion and the kaon. So they're about the simplest quantities we can do. And they're done with staggered fermions, which are the quickest type of fermion. So it will be interesting to extend these to more quantities and to check them with other methods. But it's clear that great progress has been made. So one of the fundamental things you want to do with modern lattice calculations is to measure all of the parameters of the standard model so that they can be checked against the predictions of more fundamental theories, and to search for the effects of possible new beyond the standard model physics in hadron decay data. So for example, in producing a graph like this, you tune the masses of the various quarks so that the spectrum turns out about right. That determines the quark mass, the bare lattice quark mass. And then from the bare lattice parameters, you can determine the continuum parameters that would be predicted in a grand unified theory by demanding that the lattice calculations and MS-bar calculations at short distances give the same answer, just as you would do in an effective field theory. And when you do that, and you determine the strong coupling constant that way, we know the strong coupling constant from many high-energy physics processes. And as shown in the 2004 particle data book, the lattice has agreed for a long time. As of the 2007 particle data book, lattice not only still agrees, but now gives a more precise answer than any of the other methods individually. The lattice coupling constant is determined from a whole bunch of small short-distance quantities, small Wilson loops and combinations of Wilson loops that have different sizes. And so you can see that the coupling constant obtained at different size scales obeys the prediction of the QCD beta function very well. And if you leave out the light quark loops from your calculation, it obeys the quenched beta function very well. Lattice perturbation theory works about as well in lattice QCD as it does in continuum QCD, often very well. But short distance calculations on the lattice are in much more solid shape than in regular QCD because we can also do non-perturbative calculations in lattice QCD. So for example, if you take a small box, like a hundredth the size of a proton across, the coupling is expected to be very weak there. You can, if you then subject your little box to an external chromoelectric field and measure the response of the vacuum energy, that sort of abstract quantity turns out to be really easy to calculate in lattice QCD. So by doing that calculation on one size box and then on a different size box, you can see how the coupling constant evolves and calculated completely non-perturbatively. If I just used those boxes on the left, there would be discretization errors. So what was actually done is to take the zero lattice spacing limit and then repeat the process. In QCD, where you hope at short distances that the full non-perturbative answer should be approximated really well from by perturbation theory, you'd hope that this was agreed well with the perturbative answer. And here you see it indeed agreeing very well with the perturbative calculation. This is kind of a technical curiosity as far as QCD is concerned, but I explained it in some detail because in beyond the standard model theories, where you want to do calculations investigating possible strong coupling sectors beyond the standard model, this thing can be used to do renormalization calculations, for example, in non-abelian Coulomb phase theories, as I'll get back to in the end. The strong coupling constant was known really well from a dozen different processes, and it was nice to see that the lattice is the same answer as everything else. There are many more quantities, though, for which you would only know the answer from lattice calculations. The light quark masses are an example of this. It was there was folklore from the quark model that the mass of the strange quark was somewhere around 150 MeV. We know now that that's simply wrong. The right answer is around 100 MeV. Here are some good calculations from the Milk collaboration. In particular, one very interesting one, which if this stands up, is going to be one of the most important results that lattice QCD produces from beyond the standard model physics, is MU seems not to be zero. Now, one of the only sensible resolutions of this strong CP problem, which has been pushed by Nadi Zyberg, among others, is that the mass of the U quark is about, is exactly zero. And here, this does not seem to be showing up in the lattice calculations so far. The mass of the U quark, it's notoriously tricky to figure out what you mean by a U quark at this level of precision, because non-perturbative effects mix up the light quarks with each other. But so far in the in the lattice data, there doesn't seem to be a hint of the answer that we'd really like, which is mu equals zero. One of the most interesting, one of the most noted results accomplished at Fermilab in the last 5 years was the discovery of BS-BS bar mixing, and with the result, with the aid of lattice calculations, this produced the following improvement in our understanding of the constraints in rho and eta, the CP violating parameters. The experiment now is fantastically accurate. It's already better than 1%. It'll probably get to a 0.5% accuracy eventually with the rest of their data set. So you can see that there's a lot of potential for improving our understanding of the possibilities of beyond the standard model effects and bounding them in these theories by keeping pushing the lattice calculations more and more accurately. It's most of the quantities that we analyze with lattice calculations are known, have been known pretty well for a long time, so it's not so easy to make real predictions. Here's an example of one case where we did predict something to about 10% before experiment followed us. Here is the lattice. These are lattice predictions with 0, 2, and the correct number 3 light quarks in the vacuum, and here is the experiment. So this was nice and fun. We have to remember, though, that we don't expect perfect agreement always in quantities like this, because probably there are some beyond the standard model effects that are small, that are, will show up in sufficiently accurate hadron data eventually. So it's important not to be too prejudiced, that your results have to agree with experiment all the time. And I'll come back to this in a slide or two. So examples of few things that have just come out in the last few months. In kaon physics, B sub k, which was another one of the graphs constraining the rho eta plane that I showed before, was known rather poorly. It was known from quenched approximations, calculation with unknown errors, and a staggered quark calculation that had a large uncertainty due to a renormalization problem. The result, the RBC collaboration has produced a much improved B sub K recently. And this was done with domain wall fermions. This is an example of one of the quantities in which staggered fermions not, seem not to be the most quick and easy to use method. A reason was that the very clean chiral symmetry of domain wall fermions was used to improve this calculation. Now, the biggest and most perplexing recent result, as far as I'm concerned, has been the announcement of new decay constants from the HBQCD collaboration. Decay constants parameterize the amplitude from meson to decay into a pair of leptons. So I showed you an earlier result and claimed that the 10% error, the 10% agreement was a success. That 10% difference between theory and experiment has stayed. Theory has stayed low and experiment has stayed high. And the errors are now much reduced, both in theory and in experiment. So this is perplexing for a variety of reasons. You might take the attitude that three sigma discrepancies in the standard model have always gone away, and this one will too. That may very well be the right attitude to take. But what's a bit perplexing is that this calculation was done with identical methods on pi's, k's, and d mesons, and gave an answer which agrees great with experiment in the other three cases. Furthermore, the uncertainty was dominated by experimental statistical error, which is the one kind of error that we think we understand very well. If you say the theorists blew their errors by a factor of two or three, you still end up with a three sigma discrepancy. So this theory method is innovative, and it hasn't been confirmed by anybody else yet. But it's being taken seriously enough that Kronfeld and Dombrowski tried to figure out some models where beyond the standard model effects would show up in this system and not in other systems, like a two Higgs doublet model where by fiat, more or less, you couple one of the Higgses to the charm and strange quark that makes up a D and S meson. So all that said, I guess I would expect more that at this stage in the game, it's more likely that this will go away than that this is beyond the standard model physics. But I actually don't have there's no clean explanation for the discrepancy. So I won't go through every single lattice decay amplitude that bears on CKM physics, but all of the CKM matrix elements except for VTD can be attacked with good possible lattice calculations. And so there's lots of work going on all the time improving our knowledge of these things from lattice calculations. And of course, I've only scratched the surface of what's happening in lattice gauge theory right now, because there's lots of other activity in areas that don't bear so much on beyond the standard model physics. In baryons, from Krishna Rajagopal, we've learned about an exciting new result in calculating the viscosity of the plasma on the lattice, which is something that can also be calculated in SUSY models. And the fact that it gives results in both in QCD and in SUSY, where the viscosity is very low, much lower than expected, is an exciting result. So, having said all this, let me stand back a bit and say, where do we stand now in the evolution of lattice QCD? We now have a new tool in the set of tools for quantum field theory, perturbation theory, duality, to attack things. We can calculate some non-trivial things, and there are a lot of important applications that awake. What are the most important things that are going to be, that we need lattice gauge theory to do in the quest for beyond the standard model physics in the LHC era? There are two basic lines of attack. The current success in lattice flavor physics has to be made really precise, because the experiments are so precise, to allow more precise searches for beyond the standard model physics. And as I'll say now, we're now at the point where we understand the QCD methods well enough that we can start to think about using these lattice methods to investigate directly beyond the standard model strongly coupled theories. So what's needed in the LHC era? First and foremost, really high precision. The experiments for KK bar mixing and BS bar mixing are already at the sub-percent level, as I said. And so there's a lot of potential for improved lattice calculations to tighten up our knowledge of the presence or absence of beyond the standard model effects and flavor changing processes. I think all lattice gauge theorists would agree now that we're getting there soon. You'd get different answers about whether this will happen in 2 or 3 years or in 5 years. So the even more exciting application of lattice calculations is starting to apply them to beyond the standard model physics. The problem here is that theory space is really big. These simulation calculations are million-dollar calculations, and so we can't really do the scan over theory space that we'd like to do and use simulations to investigate a broad swath of theories. So I'll just give what people are doing so far is to take representative examples of beyond the standard model, possible beyond the standard model physics, and tuning up their methods to do them well. So one of the more doable and interesting ones is the search for a strongly coupled non-abelian Coulomb phase in the conformal window. If you change the number of quarks in a theory, for example, in SU3 gauge theory, if the number of flavors is smaller than a critical number, which is 16 for SU3 gauge theory, but it's larger than another critical number, which is somewhere like 8 or 9, we don't know exactly where, then the theory is asymptotically free, but in the infrared, it approaches a fixed point. And if NF is close to NCF, the fixed point is strong. If NF is just slightly over NCF, so that it's confining but close to the conformal boundary, then you can have you could imagine a long period of slow running of the coupling and a very large anomalous dimension for fermions building up before the theory becomes confining. And this is a mechanism that is used to explain the absence of flavor-changing neutral currents in the context of technicolor models called walking technicolor. And this can be investigated with the non-perturbative step scaling calculations that I've already shown work well in QCD. So this has been done by Tom Applequist with Fleming and Neal, and these are the results that they found so far. They use SU3 gauge theory for their example of this beyond the standard model group because our methods, our algorithms and codes for the SU3 simulation calculations are really tuned up. But of course, it would be interesting to do this for all kinds of different groups. They then vary NF to search non-perturbatively for this strongly coupled non-abelian fixed point. So when NF equals 12 flavors, they find this result here. They find a weakly coupled fixed point that agrees very well with the predictions of perturbation theory. When they use 8 flavors, they find a confining theory. This is contrary to some previous claims in the literature. And I believe this is a more serious calculation than the previous ones. So now they want to know what happens for NF equals 10 to try to find the boundary in NF of the Coulomb phase versus next to the confined phase. They used staggered fermions for the first two calculations, which have zero theoretical problems when NF equals 4, but they want to do things at 0 quark mass, for which staggered fermions are not so appropriate when NF is not a multiple of 4. So they're now retooling to use Wilson fermions, and they're going to try to find out what happens at NF equals 10, and then presumably at NF equals 9 and 11. We can start investigating SUSY theories with these methods now. Supersymmetry is broken by discretization errors in the most straightforward implementations of SUSY on the lattice. The simplest non-trivial SUSY theory is probably pure SUSY Yang-Mills theory. Kaplan and Schmaltz have shown that SUSY is recovered automatically in the continuum limit, and so it's much easier to recover SUSY in this theory than in more complicated SUSY theories. The goal is to first verify that SUSY is broken dynamically, which we already know from duality calculations and other ways, then to produce a lot of numerical results, like the fermionic and boson blue ball spectra, the value of the Suzy condensate compared to the string tension, et cetera. I decided against showing you any intermediate results yet, because since they don't have final results, I thought it would be confusing to show you a graph of what they're trying to do. But there's a large program by Simon Catterall and his collaborators, again, using the well-tuned SU3 Yang-Mills codes that people have developed for the QCD calculations that I've already told you about. If these are successful, then you can make you can attack more and more ambitious problems. Next, you'd probably put in matter fields. A squark action would have a Laplacian in the bosonic part, and that would introduce a fine tuning again, just like we had to recover chiral symmetry for for Wilson fermions. And so that would be another can of worms that we beyond what we have now. So there's a lot of interesting opportunities that have been opened up to us now and that we're just starting to investigate. So to sum up, with lattice QCD, we now have a new tool for fundamental investigations in quantum field theory. And the era of precision lattice calculations with all errors controlled has arrived. And many interesting things have been done now entirely from first principles. We're beginning to scratch the surface of non-perturbative beyond the standard model physics, but the area of theory space there is dauntingly vast. So much more is going to be required of us in the LHC era. 1% accuracy in QCD calculations, many new calculations that we haven't been able to achieved so far, and we need to start learning how to do equally accurate calculations in new strongly interacting theories that we will hopefully find evidence for at the LHC. Thanks.
For questions?
I was just struck that on the one hand, you were talking about million-dollar simulations, and mm-hmm. then you were talking about going beyond the standard model physics, and you had a couple of collaborations of three people.
Uh-huh.
Are they using supercomputers and
yeah.
Oh, they are? Yep. Okay. But that's readily accessible.
There's a big national program that the DOE has to install dedicated computers for lattice calculations. And there's also a lot of time that we get from supercomputer centers. So there's tons of time being spent. And those last two calculations, the beyond the standard model ones, those are expensive calculations. And so the calculation that you'd really like to do in exploring the conformal window, you'd like to, for SU3, tune NF and find exactly where the conformal window is and find out if there's anything interesting on the borderline, and then do it for SU4, SU5, SU6, then do it for different fermion representations, not just fundamental. But that would be like, it's easy to come up with a $100 million program in that. So it's sort of limiting now. So if we're at the point now where if you discover something at the LHC and we know what the theory is, the right beyond the standard model theory is, we can probably do it now, or depending on what it is, some of them we can do. But we'd also like to just do the way phenomenologists just investigate the whole families of theories. But that's too much right at the present.
Stefan didn't rip the microphone away yet. Is anybody interested in N=4, or is that just N=4 supersymmetric Yang-Mills?
Yeah. I'm not an expert in that. People are trying to formulate that to build in that Suzy directly. Like I talked about problems that you would have if you just implemented Suzy in the most naive way. People are trying to be super fancy and tricky and implement it in more clever ways. And maybe that will succeed.
I'm wondering, so it wasn't quite clear to me, how many cases there were where the lattice calculation actually advanced the precision of the experiment, so that later the lattice calculation were more precise, and then the experimental accuracy has confirmed the result.
There were a handful of them. There's the D sub S to K constant, the mass of the B sub C meson, the shape of the semi-leptonic decay, K goes to pi L nu, were all predicted in lattice publications before they were announced by the experiment. Those are the exception, I should say, where most of the time we're analyzing data that's been well known for anywhere between 10 and 50 years.
So most model you described seems to be vector-like theories. Do you have any comments on pure chiral gauge theories on lattice?
No. In the slide when I discussed the setup of lattice gauge theories, well, it depends on what you mean by chiral gauge theories. Like chiral, some people call chiral theories but with real fermion content chiral. That type of chiral theory can be done very well with domain wall fermions. The interesting chiral gauge theories, to me, are ones with complex fermion content, like SU5 with a 5 and a 10 bar. When that gets confining, presumably it forms condensates that break the SU5 gauge symmetry. So that would be really interesting to do on the lattice, and we just can't do it at all. People are arguing whether that's even been formulated correctly with domain wall fermions. And even if it were, because our methods are all developed for Euclidean time, things that have complex, and they require real determinants so that you can use probabilistic methods to sample over the path integral. When you have complex fermion representations, the fermion determinants are complex, and you can't interpret them as probabilities. So the inability to do things away from Euclidean time is a real serious limitation at present. And so that very interesting class of theories, we don't have good ideas for attacking.
So let me preface my question with a comment. The comment is generic, that there's many other things for which the lattice has been good at determining. There's other methods of determining that are often competitive or better.
Absolutely.
I won't give examples, but I just wanted to know that you agree.
Yes.
Thank you. The question is epsilon prime over epsilon. Is there any progress on that? It was a bit of an embarrassment for our community that we spend so much money on the experiments and they never actually experiment.
That is something which will eventually be done very well with lattice calculations. Its difficulty is that it has two pions in the final state. And since we're in Euclidean time, if you have a single hadron in a state, the transition to Euclidean time is very simple. E to the I ET goes to E to the minus ET, and it takes one line to analyze it. When you have two pions in the system, you have to do very complicated things to analyze it honestly. And the methods have all been worked out by Luscher and Lelouch and by other people. And it involves, instead of lattice simulations at a single large volume, lattice simulations at many different volumes, and then fitting the scattering length and all the parameters of the effective pion theory to the lattice simulation data. And it's perfectly doable, and if that were the only problem in the universe, it could even be done now by assigning all of our postdocs and computer time to it. But you know, there are 10 other calculations we can do much easier that are just as important. So people have done approximate epsilon prime calculations. To do it really honestly, we just take like 10 times as much effort as the other calculations that I've shown you here. And so it's stuff that we know how to do, so it will be done eventually. It's not at the top of the priority list of any particular collaboration right now.
So let's thank our speaker, in fact, all speakers again.
And since it's the last talk of the conference, maybe we should all thank the organizers of the interesting and unique conference one more time. Yeah.